Welcome to the SportsTech Research Podcast. We connect research-driven professionals working within the sports technology ecosystem. The show is brought to you by STRN, SportsTech Research Network. Your host for today is Christophe de Meij.
Hi, everybody. Welcome again in the SportsTech Research Podcast. Really pleased to have Peter Duking here in the show. Peter is working at the University of Würzburg and I think is one of the key authors in the area of sports wearables. Hi, Peter. How are you doing?
Christophe, nice to meet you again virtually this time. It's a pleasure to be on your podcast. And thanks for setting up the Sport Technology Research Network. It's a great initiative.
Thank you very much. And as always, thanks for taking the time to speak. I always start with the same question, a bit a short introduction about yourself, your background and your field of expertise.
Yes, of course. So, Christophe, as you already said, I am working at the University of Würzburg, the Institute of Billy Sperlich. Prior to that, I did my studies at the Royal Melbourne Institute of Technology and at the German Sports University, where I obtained my master's degrees from in the field of sports technology. I'm doing research at the intersection of wearable sensor technologies, and I try to figure out and see if and how these wearable sensors can be applied to improve training procedures of athletes.
You're looking at it, and that's an interesting fact, I think. You're looking at it from both a technical perspective, as from an exercise physiological perspective, as from a behavioral change perspective. How come you have those different views? Is it because of personal interest, or is the project you're running really targeted as on that specific intersection of things?
Yes. So let's say in my heart or in my chest, there are beating three hearts. So one, of course, is the athlete's heart. And then there is the researcher's perspective coming from a more physiological or training or exercise science view. And then it's the wearable tech nerd perspective. And I think one needs those three hearts, or at least I believe that, because only if you understand the athlete, only if you understand what can the industry, what can the sensor technology and the algorithms provide, and how do we all bring this together and make sense out of that data? And that's where the second heart comes in, the training science heart. How can we basically fit those views together, and how can we make sense of all of that in order to get, let's say, meaningful insights in order to steer training procedures in a certain direction where we see the most benefit. And I think all views are equally relevant in that topic. Mm-hmm.
I can only agree, and we talked about that earlier. These days, it's all about, okay, what are we actually doing with the data? How do we make it relevant and so on? And then indeed, the different perspectives are needed in order to make value out of the data. Could you explain a little bit the type of project you're working on for the moment, the kind of research you're doing?
Yes, of course. So let's say the overall goal is trying to see or to evaluate how and if wearables can aid us in defining more specific or individualizing training procedures for athletes in order to get optimal results.
Mm-hmm. And you're mainly using commercially available solutions, or are you also working on own sensor or data innovations?
Good question. So let's say we're not only using end consumer wearables, but also we are using wearables which are coming from a research state. That doesn't necessarily mean we develop the sensor on ourselves or that we develop the algorithm on ourselves, but we collaborate with institutions which can do so. Our expertise is more like, okay, how can we use a certain sensor? How can we use a certain algorithm to make sense out of it, to interpret it in a specific context? And that's actually where I see that there is a lack currently on the market. Because we got tons of sensors, we got tons of algorithms. But at the end of the day, it's more about, okay, what do we do with that data? To give you maybe an example. Now, the smartwatches, a lot of them give you insights into your maximal oxygen consumption, your VO2 max. And maybe let's not discuss if that's reliable data or if that's valid data. even if it's reliable. The question is, if I give that information to an end consumer athlete who is not necessarily well educated in the field of physiology, in training science and exercise science, then the smartwatch gives you a number. And the question is, okay, I see my VO2 max is maybe 55. And then the question is, okay, what am I doing now? What do I do with that number? And that comes into perspective then when I say, okay, we got to interpret that in the specific context. A coach would know, okay, that's maybe somewhere not too bad, but maybe also not too high of VO2 max. And he could interpret that VO2 max. Then he could evaluate maybe, okay, the training procedure that I did in the last, I don't know, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, that was efficient or not, or that was leading me in the right direction. But the question then is, okay, what do I do next? Do I alter my training procedure? Do I keep it like that? And that's where we need to develop that algorithms or that industry a little bit further, not just to give out plain numbers, but to steer them in a way that they can give useful insights into training procedure optimization.
Yeah, going from metrics to insights and decision making.
True.
So to say.
Yes. And having said that, I mean, we did a lot of studies on validation of sensors. And I think that's, depending on the sensor type, depending on the application, not necessarily the issue anymore. I mean, this is just a matter of time. The sensors are getting better. We see that year over year. So our lab is running actually quite a high amount of validation studies. And we see that year after year, the sensor quality, depending on the parameter, is and of the manufacturer is getting better. But the issue is really, okay, how to make sense out of the data and how to improve training of athletes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In previous podcasts and some blogs we've written and also in some academic papers, there's often the discussion between sports and health. Health promotion is not sports. Sports can help to improve health, but in the end it's also in the tech world, it's the health tech or the sports tech world. It's a bit two different ecosystems, two different application domains as well. Your work is relevant, I think, for both in terms of improving physical activity levels in general in different populations, as improving training strategies within endurance athletes. Could you elaborate? You already gave the example of the VO2max metric. Could you elaborate a little bit on those different use cases where you are working on and
yes,
the value of work could in the end be really made clear?
Yes, of course. So let's start with the performance aspect, because that's where I'd say 70% of my work is related. So when it comes to that, there's one parameter which is, or that there is not one parameter, but let's say we recently did a study and published it in the Scandinavian journal, which was focusing on the effects of heart rate variability and how heart rate variability can be used to guide runners' training. And to give a little bit of background, let's say heart rate variability in plain terms is a marker of or stress on the autonomic nervous system. And that could be or is a marker which could be used to guide your training. So if your heart rate variability is decreasing, that basically means you are getting more and more stressed. Whereas if your heart rate variability is increasing, that basically could mean that you are recovering better or that you recovered already. So, and that could actually be used to say, okay, are you stressed or are you not stressed? And let's say if you're stressed, or stress too much on your, depending on your individual heart rate variability level, then your training maybe should be reduced. Whereas if your heart rate variability is high, that could mean that you're recovered and then we could give you more training. So we looked at the literature in that case, and what we saw is actually fantastic. At least to me, that's fantastic. Because we could see that when we adjust the training according to the heart rate variability, if it's monitored correctly, if it's interpreted correctly, then we could see, okay, that the athletes who use that parameter gain more performance enhancements than compared to the ones who did not have that adjustments. the effects were small, let's say, but there's a tendency. And that basically means that I can use and interpret and add value by using wearable sensors who, for example, pick up heart rate variability to guide training. And that's, to me, that's fantastic. That means, okay, all of what we're doing, at least for that parameter, can have a benefit for the athlete.
Mm-hmm. And in your literature search, did you also find how a parameter as heart rate variability is also used in non-athletes?
Yeah, let's say the literature is quite, or the heart rate variability literature, that's a huge field. I mean, that parameter is around since decades. Specifically, I looked just at runners, and we're currently now developing that topic into other fields. But that field still needs to develop, the field of really comparing the effects of heart rate variability guided training, so to say, compared to predefined training. The literature is very scarce and it needs to improve, and or there's more research needed. For example, we know, okay, performance parameters, there's a small effect on those, but we have no clue, okay, what's the physiological basis about that? How is variability in certain physiological parameters who lead to that performance enhancement? There's a tendency that more submaximal physiological variables, so speed at certain lactate thresholds, are increased more when you do heart rate variability guided training than when you do predefined training. But that's very scarce, the literature. So, but that's the beauty. So we still got work to do, and we can still improve that field. Yeah.
Which is cool, of course. Mm-hmm. That also relates a bit to another question that pops in mind is, how do you as a researcher try to translate your knowledge, your insights from the academic world into the industry? Of course, one thing you already mentioned is working with the companies or for the companies. Could you tell the listeners a little bit more about how you as a researcher try to be, let's say, impactful and meaningful, and how your findings are translated in the end, of course, through the publications, but maybe also there were some other things you do in order to help move the field forward?
Mm-hmm. Yes, of course, as researchers, we tend to believe, okay, we publish a paper and then it's out there in the world, and the world will find that paper, but
you know where I was heading towards.
Yes. so this is also the reason why I think such initiatives that as you're setting up the Sports Technology Research Network is beneficial, because at the end of the day, it's about finding relevant people and about connecting with those people, ideally at a physical conference, at a coffee or with some other drinks. But nowadays, I think what you got to do is to be active on Twitter. You got to be maybe set up your own webpage, and do podcasts like these. And so that's the only way. And I can only encourage all students or all researchers to be more active in that field. At least that's my experience. Of course, if you got personal connections to journalists, that's a plus as well.
And of course, many of these things, they remain confidential, of course. But are you and is Würzburg as a university in R&D collaborations with industry? Are you thinking of spinning out certain products yourself? Do you get any support from within the university, as for example, I'm doing for Ghent University? Or how was your experience?
Yes, so let's say the University of Würzburg or our institute is very well connected within the university. So let's say to the machine learning department, to the data mining department, or to the human machine interaction department. And of course, we got an institution within the university which helps startups to grow or to spin out of the university. To me, we had a couple of spin-offs where we thought about, okay, that could be valuable. But then, of course, it's also personal preference. Okay, is this really something where students would like to pursue a career in? it's somewhat difficult to spin out of a university because you have to have that entrepreneurial mindset as well.
And that's often a challenge. I think it's a global thing. Many people say, I mean, researchers, they remain researcher in the end. And there are only a few exceptions of people who then, I mean, are entrepreneurial enough to say like, okay, let's spin out a certain technology as a real startup and attract other entrepreneurs and some investors. I'm actually doing some kind of research myself, looking at what are the spin-outs being accomplished in the past decade within Europe in relation to sport. And I only found around 30 for the moment, which is very limited. If you know, they are in Benjamin Panker's database. I mean, not sure about Europe, but I think it's about 3,000 sports tech startups or something that are out there. Of course, not all related to athlete and health, but I mean, it's a very small fragment, I think, of what's in the market. Yeah, and that's a question that I often ask myself, like, okay, is that an issue? I mean, I think so. If you look at the amount of money that is going into research, and then you see, okay, there's limited amount of all of that knowledge that in the end is used or enters a certain valuation track, as we call it. On the other hand, of course, collaborating with companies is also a good way of translating your academic knowledge into the real world.
Yes.
Yeah, but happy to hear your thoughts around the role of entrepreneurship within the area you are working in.
Yes. No, I think we're on the same page. I mean, if I look at the students we are teaching at the University of Würzburg, or at least in our courses. So they learn a lot about, okay, what's endurance? How do I train it? What's strength? How can certain sensors be applied? How can that maybe be beneficial? But they're not necessarily getting taught in, okay, if I have an idea, what am I going to do with it? And how do I evaluate the market? So is there a product market fit, let's just say? Is there a fit between my idea and the market? And what's the business case? What's the numbers behind? Then, of course, the university has, outside of the normal studies, you have institutions you can go to and you can get that information from. But of course, you have to actively seek for that. And we can give some guidance, of course, but a lot of that initiative has to come from the students. And it's a tough world. I mean, we see so many applications, not necessarily from the startups, but also from the big enterprises out there on the market. What my view on that market is, it's tough. It's tough. Of course, there is a market, but to find your niche and to find the right partners to bring a product out of university on the market, that's tough business.
That's a huge challenge indeed. Yeah.
Yes.
Maybe a side question, Peter, and I know we are taking maybe a bit more time here for these questions, but a side question that I have is related to the quality of technologies out there. Often it's said everybody can bring to market anything towards the sports market. There isn't any regulation or quality criteria or whatever there is. Of course, you have the whole medical device regulation and I think in the mHealth area there are some initiatives now also on a European level to come up a bit with quality criteria as what's the effectiveness of the application, is it safe, and so on different levels. Do you think that we need something, it's a very general question, that we need something as that when it comes to sports technologies, as for example in football, FIFA is taking the lead to develop their own quality criteria for tracking technologies, wearables, goal line technology, and so on. When it comes, of course, to other products out there, for sure, when it comes to those focused on consumers, it's up to the people in the field to decide, okay, is it worth the money? Yes or no? Is it safe? Will it be helpful for me? Yes or no? And I see many people, both individuals as people working within federations or teams, because there are so many things on the markets, it's often difficult for them to compare. And there is a website, Compare Sports Tech, that a guy in Australia is developing to add value in this discussion, of course. But happy to hear your thoughts around quality criteria in sports tech.
Yes, no, that's definitely needed in my opinion, because that's the basis. If we do not have reliable or valid data, we can make the nicest graphs out of that, but they do not mean anything at all. It will lead to nowhere. The reason where that likely comes from is, at least that's my feeling, that end consumer market field of wearables, that's driven by technological advancements. And of course, the companies, they are under stress. They need to release a new product very, very quickly and to be the on the forefront. Okay, who is giving out a new graph? Who's giving out a new parameter? But at the end of the day, that's not helping anybody. Of course, maybe the companies make some revenue, maybe the marketing department can make some nice slides out of it, then that's certainly beneficial, or maybe beneficial for the short term. But in the long term, I believe this could be harmful for the overall wearable market, because the people lose trust a little bit on that data. And that's also why FIFA is setting up. So we definitely need some guidelines or some recommendations. Okay, what's a good data? What's bad data? What are maybe certain thresholds where you can say, okay, you can use this data in that context or in another context, but not in another context, maybe.
And there, of course, research could be really of value. And yeah, maybe last point is at a certain point in time, I realized in the whole sports tech hype, you could say, that the whole sports medicine community is not really involved. And probably that's because of many of those technologies lack accuracy, reliability, validity, effectiveness, and so on and so on. Mm-hmm. And I think, yeah, in order, you said there the word trust, in order to have higher trust and also for smaller sports organizations, I think the willingness to invest money in it. Yeah, at some point, I think we as a sports tech community should be able to show the real added value of the products. And now that's often difficult to really show in the end, it's also what's the return on investment when it comes to both professional sports, but also, I mean, from a health perspective. Yes. Also regional governments, national, European, they will also ask themselves the question, okay, what's the health economic value of these things when it comes to, for example, injury prevention, health, physical activity promotion, and so on, just as that is being done in medical devices. Do you agree with what I said, or any other thoughts?
No, that's a fairly good point. Let me rephrase it or give you my perspective on it. We can give or monitor or report or feedback a lot of parameters, but often there is a connection lacking. So what does it mean if a certain parameter goes up or goes down? What does that mean for my sportive performance? What does that mean for my health? For, let's say, for heart rate variability, as I said before, we might got an idea or at least one parameter. Okay, if heart rate variability goes up or down, I should do this or that with my training procedure. But with many other variables or parameters or biomarkers, we do not have that. And that's where we need to improve the field or the physiological basis. Okay, what's the evidence? What should be done when a certain parameter or a set of parameters in a certain context goes up or down? So how should that alter my course of action? And this is where I see that a collaboration between industry and research is needed, because how should industry know what they do if we as scientists doesn't know for many parameters what's that meaning if a certain parameter set or parameter marker set goes up or down?
Agree. And of course, we were speaking here in very general terms and not about specific technologies or application domains, but in general, do you have the impression that current evidence is implemented well within the commercially available technologies, and it's just a matter of new research and innovation in order to move forward? Or do you also have the impression that in many technologies, they don't yet even include the existing scientific knowledge when it comes to more scientific insights and so on?
Let's say it depends on the company. There are companies out there which are more marketing driven, who do not care that much about what parameters they are reporting, what guidance they may be giving by that parameters. But there are certainly companies out there which do take great care about that the parameters they are reporting are reliable, are valid, and that they can be useful even on the sports market for the consumer. Let's say a business case, which is or a strategic positioning of the companies, which way do they approach? Because of course, if you want to improve data reliability, if you want to improve validity, if you want to include the existing scientific literature into your devices, that costs money, of course. And I think we as researchers need to highlight more and more, okay, why that's definitely needed, why they should implement it. Because at the end of the day, that's only when you really generate value and when you can move all of that field of wearable technologies in the sportive field forward. Because otherwise people will say, okay, I bought a smartwatch 2 years ago, it didn't help me, why should I buy a new one? And that's when we got an issue, maybe.
Yeah. Right. Interesting discussion. I want to jump a little bit to another topic, and that's related to the challenges that you as a researcher are having, sort of the critical hurdles to overcome. Talking to many researchers, it's always finding funding for research. That's always one of the challenges. Do you also experience the same?
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, research funding, that's always competitive. But let's say you can get research funding when you solve an issue. The best approach, or what works often very well, is if you connect to the ones using the wearables or the athletes, the sportive people, the coaches, and ask them, hey, what do you don't know? What's an issue you're having? And then if they come up with a problem, and then we can see, okay, if that's an issue, okay, how can we solve it via wearable technologies or via other technologies, or maybe we don't need a technology for that. That basically applies for any other research field as well. Getting funding then is easier than coming up with a technology and saying, hey, I got a technology, what issues can I solve? The other way around, coming up with a problem and solving that problem with existing technologies, or maybe then developing a technology into a certain direction, then let's say funding is getting easier from my experience. Mm-hmm.
I totally agree. And I think what you just explained is a bit the vision of the modern researcher, I think, as he should be. Right. Both with the network and also in the podcasts, I'm also very curious to know, how do you see the relation between what you are doing and what people in other disciplines and maybe in totally different fields or sectors are doing? And are there any synergies? Often that is then called cross-sectoral innovation or cross-industry innovation and so on. And often it's referred to sport as being the ideal sector to do that. But I'm always interested in specific cases and particular visions that people have or experiences that they have.
Yes, no, I'm a big believer in collaborations and in cross-sectional or lateral innovation. When it comes to wearables and sports or training, and then it doesn't actually matter if it's performance or health applications, maybe, there are a lot of questions. That's a huge field. And it's not simply about, okay, what's the physiology doing? That's maybe a part we as an institute here can cover a bit. But there are other questions. Of course, with all these wearables, we can access a huge amount of data. But then the question is, what are we doing with that? And then also the question is big data analysis, doesn't matter if that's artificial intelligence or some machine learning approach, is that giving us an added value? And that's where we need to collaborate, or some hurdles which need to be overcome, is that we don't speak necessarily the same language. So of course we speak the same language, but it's talking in different worlds. So the machine learning guys, they are thinking in numbers. They are thinking about, okay, I need millions of data points and then I can draw a graph. But then it's, okay, what do we do with this graph? And how do we steer it in a direction? Maybe also the next step, even if we got an algorithm which is running very, very nicely and which giving us meaningful insights, then it's maybe, okay, how do we feedback that data to the athlete, to the coach, to the end consumer, to whoever that is? And for that, maybe we need guys who are coming from the field of human-machine interaction, or which are maybe coming from the psychology field, who could tell us, okay, look, you need to develop that feedback with this and this thought in mind, with this feedback mechanism, or they call it behavior change technique involved, in order to at least have the chance to alter the course of action of the athlete, of the person. So there's huge collaboration opportunities possible, but also needed.
Yeah, right. Interesting. And a question that I have that is related to that is, in your country and region, are there any funding mechanisms where researchers from different disciplines and maybe even people from the industry, from the start of a project, starts to collaborate? Here in Flanders, we have different types of projects, and you can have funding from the government. For example, one of the projects is called IMEC ICON projects, where some researchers from complementary fields, for example, user research, it could be sensor development, AI, sports science, on the one hand, and then on the other hand, companies with complementary technologies, so hardware, software, company which is then really into sports already. They start a joint effort, for example, of 2 years to come up with a certain innovation. So that's a particular project that people could apply for. Are there any of those type of grants in Germany?
Yes, I believe there are grants in Germany as well, where collaborative institutions could apply for. But it's hard to name a specific one, because it, of course, depends upon the targeted problem you are trying to solve or the population you're aiming at. But I'd say it's definitely possible to get funding in that area if you have the right question and if you have the right partners in place.
Yeah. Because that's often when we talk about challenges, of course, given the natural structure of universities within faculties and departments, people sometimes start a certain project from their own specific field of expertise, could be an engineer, for example, or a biomechanist or whatever it is. And then sometimes they develop it further. But then at a certain point, you see like, okay, but you didn't include the other points of view. Mm-hmm. So in order to really make it applicable, we still need, when it comes to sensor developments, for example, we still need to have the integration level or the manufacturing aspects need to be taken into account, or the costs for the developments need to be taken into account. Mm-hmm. So often, I mean, I see that as a challenge, but also as an opportunity. At least here in the region, the government is trying to facilitate. We also have something, for example, as the Industrial Research Fund, where you can then apply for money not only to do pure research, but also to tackle those issues, to increase the chance that in the end you will come up with something that could be used in the real world. I was just wondering, do you also see that as a challenge? Of course, I think you have a modern vision on things, so that will help. You will, I think, quite easily speak to the other people and translate their expertise to your integral kind of thinking. But still, do you see that as a challenge or?
Mm-hmm. No, I think you are completely right. I mean, the money is not laying on the streets, and you certainly have to have the right partners on board. It depends if you, of course, are more in the prototyping phase, then you have to have other partners on board. Then if you want to scale up your project, you have to have the chipset manufacturer, you have to have the algorithm experts, you have to have the application experts, you have to have the distribution partners on board, and you have to have the dissemination partners. So who disseminate the work you're doing into the world in order to get funding. It's not easy, I'd say. But let's say if you have all the right collaborations in place, I would encourage the people to try to get some funding, because, yeah, I mean, it could be a nice way of living or of starting off a career after university to have your own idea and to try to develop that idea and bring it to the market. Why not? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. Anything we missed? Something you would like to add, or maybe any ideas or call to actions to the listeners in terms of things that could accelerate your own projects?
Well, I guess we could talk for hours, Chris.
Exactly.
As a huge field.
Always when I ask that question, I'm thinking like, of course, Christoph, we missed most of the things. We only spoke for 45 minutes.
let's say if I want to ask that question, where we are heading to as a research institute is to develop a 24/7 monitoring system for athletes. And of course, many, many wearable sensors can or could or should be applied in that monitoring system, depending on the application. Of course, different sensors. So let's say for a runner, we may need different sensors than for a rower. For the runner, we may need some accelerometers, which could measure the impact forces the athlete is experiencing when hitting the ground a couple of times during a marathon or something, and also what he's doing off training. So this is basically my or the vision of the institute here, to develop a 24/7 monitoring system where different sensors can be implemented.
Mm-hmm. How large is your team, in fact, Peter?
It's growing. So let me count. 1, 2, I'd say around 10 people at the moment.
Okay.
And of course, then there are the external collaborators and so on. So the team size varies depending on the project and depending upon the different institutes who are working on the same project.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, cool. That's still a nice number. And I can imagine also in terms of team spirits, I mean, with 10 people, you can still be a bit lean and mean and move forward quickly.
At least we try to.
Yeah, well, of course, with the pandemic, it's not it's not that easy. All right, let's finish with the final question here, Peter. Who is your most inspiring scientist and why is that?
That's a difficult question. Yeah. I think I'm very grateful for all my collaborators or my mentors, which helped me along the way and who definitely inspired me. And of course, Belise Berlich, my PhD supervisor, is one I have to mention. And that's not necessarily only because he's doing great research and is very, very productive, but also how he manages teams on a more personal level. That's definitely inspiring. But as said, I'm grateful for all my collaborators, for all the talks we had on a coffee table or now virtually via Zoom or Teams or whatever other system there is. And I think there are many, many inspiring scientists out there in their specific domains. It's really hard to pick one.
But it's really, really cool to hear you find inspiration from your own team and your own previous supervisor.
Yes, and it's also inspiring to see, let's say, the students, how eager they are to learn and how willing they are to soak up knowledge and to come up with own ideas. And then they knock on the door and say, hey, Peter, can we try this? Can we try that? And of course, sometimes we can't. Sometimes. And also that's inspiring. So it's not necessarily only the fully mature and grown up scientists with years of experience in a certain field, but also the students who come up with an idea and to try to find their way. That's also inspiring to me.
That's a really nice and warm note to end with. So with this, Peter, I would really like to thank you for the really interesting conversation. We touched upon different aspects about your own work and some aspects related to the team in general. To the ones listening, again, thanks for taking the time. I hope it was helpful and inspiring for you as well. And please leave a comment, suggest other people maybe we should speak to. I know the amount of listeners is growing, which is nice, of course. And as always, if you have any advice in terms of how to bring research to the real world, how to help the real world with research within sports tech, please let us know. Thanks for listening and see you next time. Bye-bye.
This was a SportsTech Research Podcast. Podcast presented to you by STRN, an initiative of Ghent University. Did you like this episode? Make sure to check out our website strn.co and let's get in touch.